Your Honors, I'm honored to be here. It is my first appearance before this court, and understandably, I'm a little bit nervous. But I will try to do my best to explain to you what we believe is at merit in this case. Your Honors, this case is simply about whether or not Ohio, and this court specifically, intends to continue its commitment to the importance of arbitration. This is about Ohio Revised Code Section 2711.02, its proper application, and trying to avoid the improper application of Ohio Revised Code Section 2711.03. Briefly, the facts with regard to the parties in this case are as follows. In April of 1994, my client, Alan Most, was a broker with Advest. He was speaking with a former client of his when he was with the Ohio company about transferring her accounts to his control at Advest. They met at her home, that's Mrs. Woods, and he presented her with some documentation which she needed to sign. One was a transfer of cash account, another form was a form which she must sign to designate whether she wishes to accept a margin account or decline a margin account. Fortunately, this case is not about margin accounts because I couldn't really speak to that. Clearly on that form, above the line that says I decline a margin account, in bold print, is a very standard within the industry provision that says that she agrees to arbitrate any disputes between herself and Advest or Mr. Moss. Facts in this case, by her own testimony, are she was handed this document. Mr. Moss said, you have to sign here if you wish to decline a margin account. And if you look at that form, and it's in the supplement, that's exactly what it says. I hereby decline a margin account. One of the terms of that declination was an agreement to arbitrate any disputes. Those are the facts as between the parties. Procedurally speaking, Your Honors, when Mrs. Woods brought this claim against Alan Moss and against Advest, both of those parties filed on separate dates motions to stay, dismiss or stay under Ohio Revised Code Section 2711.02.
She said she did read the form.
I'm sorry. That is correct, Your Honor.
She didn't read the form. Does she have an obligation to read it?
Yes, she did, Your Honor. Well, she certainly has an obligation. Let me phrase it another way, if I may. She cannot seek the refuge of I did not read it under the facts in this case, which are, number one, she admitted it was handed to her.
But does it ever make any difference, in this case, she was encouraged to sign it because he told her, you're only declining a margin account. Does that fact or any fact like that make any difference from the general rule that we are required to or assume that we read documents before that we sign them?
Our position is that it is absolutely no exception to that rule, Your Honor. More specifically, in this case, I do not believe that the facts show her testimony to be that I was told it is only to decline a margin account. Rather, this is where you sign if you wish to decline a margin account.
Counsel, just in human experience, if you're dealing in any business transaction where there are a lot of papers to sign, if you're handed a paper and you're told you got to sign this if you don't want something we're offering,
yes,
and you sign that, that's the kind of thing you sign fairly readily, saying, okay, fine, I don't want that, I'll sign that. It wouldn't ordinarily occur to you that you need to read the fine print to find out what you are accepting when you're told this is a document to decline something.
Your Honor, I have no disagreement with that common experience, but I would respond in two ways. Number one, fortunately, Ohio law, since 1909, says if it's right in front of you and you have the opportunity to read it, you cannot later claim that someone else defrauded you into signing it.
If your client handed her this document, said this is to decline a margin account, it also included a deed to her house, she's just deeded her house away.
Well, I think the one difference there, Your Honor, is there's some case law that says when there are unfavorable terms located in a document, that there may be a duty. Okay. I would submit, Your Honor, that Ohio law has clearly said agreeing to arbitration is not an unfavorable term, rather just the opposite. It's to be encouraged.
Well, and besides which, if you, I mean, there are cases that say that was, that's a material misrepresentation, so there'd be evidence of that. It might make a difference. There are cases.
Absolutely. I'm sure a trier of fact.
But aren't we here today to decide whether a court should determine this issue or the arbiter? Is that the issue before us?
Yes, Your Honor, it is.
Okay. And if there was fraud in the inducement of signing the agreement, then a court determines that. Is that correct?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. You go ahead. Explain.
For all the reasons set forth in our brief, and may I point out, none of these arguments were opposed by appellees in their brief, that very claim is itself arbitrable. And again, I apologize if I wasn't able to complete my response to Justice Pfeiffer. The other element is this was not fine print. Your Honor, I'm looking.
It's bold-faced.
Yes, sir. And in fact, it is the only bold-faced language in the agreement by my reading. I'm at supplement page 2, except for the part that says, please read. The only thing that's in bold, Your Honor, is please read and sign here if you do not want a margin account. The only other things that are in bold are, by signing below, I acknowledge that, and they list it out, arbitration, her signature. She admitted at the hearing, which should never have taken place, that she was able to read on that day, and there was nothing that prevented her from reading that. And again, I go back to the cases, back to 1909.
But he was not only her broker, he was her trusted friend. Doesn't that put you in a fiduciary position?
Again, Your Honor, I don't recall any, I am not aware of any case law that says I'm a trusted friend, therefore I have some greater duty than the common experiences of friends amongst friends. And secondly, again, this is not a negative, this is not a bad thing. He said, you have to sign here as opposed to down below to decline a margin account. If you sign below, you'll be accepting a margin account. There in bold face, this is not a multi-paged document. Justice Pfeiffer mentioned, well, when you're handed a stack of documents and you go through it, that's a very common experience. That is not the experience here. We have two pieces of paper. One is the cash, and the second is the declination page.
Counsel, going back to the issue of whether the court should have decided this or whether this was referable to arbitration to decide, I believe you rely on Prima Paint for your basis, which is a U.S. Supreme Court.
Understand.
How do we apply the U.S. Supreme Court to Ohio? Is there anything in Ohio that brings this case to us, or is it you just rely on general contract arbitration principles?
No. What I find, Your Honor, is an exact parallel between the federal position and this state's position encouraging arbitration. And what I point to Prima Paint is to say, fortunately, we have at our disposal some very learned justices who have reviewed these issues within the context of statutes and policies that also encourage arbitration, just as in our situation. I am not claiming that Prima Paint case is controlling law on this issue, and this court is bound by it. What I am suggesting very strongly is that if this state, by statute and by case law, has consistently held the position that in our overly litigious society, we need to encourage arbitration, and the federal law has taken the same route, and has now encountered fact patterns like this, and has spoken to them, I see great logic in it. And I would think it would be not only lacking in my duty to my client, but also my duty to the court to
what
bring
about,
this to your attention.
What about counsel's argument that if you leave it to an arbitrator to decide fraud in the inducement, the arbitrator is making some money off of being an arbitrator and gets some income, and he may have some self-interests that make him decide the other way because he wants to be able to hear the case. How do you respond to those arguments?
Well, Your Honor, all I can say is someone somewhere decided arbitration was a good idea. Personally, I agree with it. But if the whole point of arbitration is going to be undone because arbitrators get paid, then I don't have a response to that other than the hope and the confidence that an arbitrator who I believe 9 times out of 10 will be an attorney, maybe not in the securities cases, but has some, got there somehow, is going to follow a very common oath and not be simply there to self-serve to try to, as an income generator. So I can't address the human shortcomings of an arbitrator, what he or she might do. I suppose I would say, obviously present company excluded, there are some judges out there who some might say, well, that judge is ruling a certain way because that judge has a bias. As inappropriate as that would be, and as much as I would argue that 99.9 times out of 100 that's not the case, someone could still make that argument.
Mr. Galliano.
I'm sorry.
The argument here about fraud and the inducement, is the law different where there, in terms of who should decide it, is such a claim, is the law different with regard to a claim of fraud in the inducement specifically as to the arbitration clause as opposed to the scenario what we have here, which is fraud in the inducement in the signing of the contract as a whole?
Justice, the only case law which I'm aware of, which we cite in our brief, is that, first of all, to even come under consideration of having this move to court on fraud issue, you have to specifically allege fraud as to the arbitration clause itself. And in the case law, which we cite, and I apologize, I don't have that page at my ready disposal, we make that distinction, I'll get it during my rebuttal if I may, that when you have simply a claim of, he told me to sign it and I didn't read it, that's just a general claim of fraud. It's not a, he told me to sign this and said don't worry about arbitration. He told me to sign this and said it doesn't have an arbitration clause. He didn't say don't worry about that arbitration clause. There's no allegation of that.
In that scenario where one just says, doesn't have a particular material misrepresentation about arbitration, who is to decide that, a court or the arbitrator in the case where you have language that says any controversy shall be arbitrated?
Number one, it's yes, not the court, the arbitrator. That issue itself is to be arbitrated. I'll get the exact site, but I know it was a federal court.
We have it in your brief.
Well, what issues should be decided under these kind of circumstances by a court, if any?
The only issue for the court was to properly grant the motion to stay under 2711.02 and to dispatch this case to arbitration. It is certainly erroneous for the court to hold an evidentiary hearing under 2711.03. That's just out of left field. There is no reason that should be done. The irony here is that 2711.03 is also a statute that promotes arbitration. 2711.03, as the court well knows, says if you have a complaint against a party and you say, I'm mad at you and I want to sue you and we have an agreement to arbitrate this, go to arbitration with me, and the defendant says, I don't want to go, then Mrs. Woods would go to the trial court and say, force Mr. Moss and Advest to go to arbitration with me. That's not what she was saying. So 2711.03 and an evidentiary hearing underneath it should never have taken place, should never have been contemplated. I leave it really to the court this way. We're not asking for new law. We're not asking for an expansive application of law. We're asking for the only logical application that's possible.
Was that brought to the court's attention? Hey, Judge, you know, you're proceeding, you know, I don't think you should be having this hearing. It's not called for under the statute that we're proceeding under. Was that called to his attention?
Your Honor, the exact facts, as the records show, is that this hearing was held on Wednesday, July 19th, 1995. We left that hearing when the evidence was taken, realized that this judge had applied 03 and not 02, got him on the phone.
You didn't realize it then?
Did not realize it then. What is not in the record, Your Honor, is that, frankly, we could not hear him as he walked out of his chambers having read the book and sat it down. And he said, put her on the stand, and so we did. And I said, I didn't think we were taking testimony today, and he said, neither did I. Well, I didn't know really what we were doing. We were at a pretrial. He's the judge. With all due deference, we went forward. We went back. Before an entry was signed, we had a hearing on the record on Friday, July 21, 1995. Myself and Attorney Murphy on behalf of Advest, with Mr. Kingsley and the judge on the line, pointed out, Your Honor, you were applying the wrong statute. We had a hearing, which we never should have taken. We had a motion under 02, you ruled under 03, and we simply can't let this stand, and he chose to ignore that. I discussed this at page 17 of our merit brief. He chose to ignore that, and on July 24th, he signed an entry. Well-versed Ohio law, a court speaks through its entry, which means 3 days before this court decided to stand by that ruling and issue it as its decision, we advise the court, you have done the wrong thing. Beyond that, all you can do is appeal, and that's why we're here. If I may, Your Honor, reserve a few moments for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Galliano.
Thank you.
Mr. Kingsley.
Yes, Your Honor. My name is James Kingsley with Mrs. Woods, and may it please the court. If the issue before this court is who makes a decision on an alternate dispute resolution, which arbitration is, then clearly I think it's the court when the person wanting to defeat that arbitration claims fraud and inducement in the disclosing the clause. Clearly, the Supreme Court of the United States and an Ohio case has said everything is arbitral but one thing. How you got there. If you're claiming fraud and how you got there, the judge makes a decision, and rightfully so. And in my brief, I call this, because the case law calls it, a savings clause.
So you would disagree that this is a fraud in the entire document, because the person put the document in front of her and said, sign it, but didn't make any specific allegation as to the arbitration clause. You consider that fraud in the inducement of the arbitration clause itself?
Yes.
So you're drawing a distinction from him, the attorney for the adverse, saying this is a general fraud that you're alleging. You're claiming it's a specific fraud.
When he filed a motion for arbitration, we responded saying, specifically, fraud in the inducement in the procuring of the clause itself. We didn't know it was there, and he misled us to that point, and another reason, saying this is against public policy because it's a crime, et cetera, et cetera. But the judge bought the argument that it was a fraud and inducement issue.
But what's the basis of the fraud? I think that your argument would be that the person giving the document to the other person to sign it must tell them what's in the document to not be liable for fraud. Is that right? There was not even a discussion here about the arbitration clause.
That's half my argument. My first argument is this. Clearly, Mr. Moss was in a fiduciary relationship because of the business transactions and because of the stockbroker issue here. They were kind of meshing together.
Was the fiduciary relationship argued in the courts, in the trial court or the court of appeals? I thought it was not. Can you raise it here?
Discussed, but it wasn't briefed.
Well, so it wasn't presented to the court as
the duty disclosure was discussed, but the term fiduciary wasn't that term wasn't put on it. We said he had a duty to disclose that clause.
Well, what would he do any more than giving the person a document with bold print saying there's an arbitration clause here, or this is, you know, it's subject to arbitration?
This case is very simple. Here's a declination which incorporates the arbitration clause pamphlet. Here's the pamphlet that it refers to. This pamphlet says arbitration. I don't want arbitration.
Well, then would he also be obligated to tell the person everything else that's in the document? Because there may be something else that she didn't read the document, so she didn't know what was in it.
A fiduciary is obligated to disclose all material adverse parts in a document.
Arbitration is material adverse to her. Is that
taking away one's right to a trial by jury is a material fact in my mind. Let's assume that James Kingsley, when I have my client come in to sign my two-page attorney's contract, and I put in the very bottom of that, I say, here's the terms and here's what it says, and the last clause says, by the way, you can't sue for malpractice, you've got to arbitrate it.
Maybe you read
How many
it.
People read my contract
if
I give them?
If you read it, you'd see it. Why should we reward your client for not reading the document? I can't
Because the law of Ohio is very clear. It says this. If you give it to me and keep quiet, and give me a chance to read it, I'm stuck. But don't sit there and talk in my face and tell me what it says and then expect me to read it too.
She didn't read it though, did she?
Because she was in her face, diverting her attention, saying this is what it says.
She was induced not to read it, is that it?
Yes.
By the other party, was induced her not to read it by some statements.
Anyone that comes in your house and says this is what it says starts the inducement.
Doesn't that establish a very dangerous precedent, particularly for the young people that we have here, if they can have agreements in front of them and say, oh, I don't have to read it, I just have to run to the judge and say I was defrauded? One of the things we learn at almost any age is that you're supposed to read something before you sign it.
As I cited throughout my brief, the law of Ohio doesn't say that. The law of Ohio says if you open your mouth and start talking about it, you better be careful, because my duty to read starts being mitigated when you start talking.
Okay,
I have less of a duty to read the more you talk.
Okay, if I go to a bank to get a mortgage for a house, and the loan officer says, here's the mortgage note, And, you know, it's a mortgage note. It says nothing more about it. You need to sign it, you know, to get the loan. The mortgage officer has to tell me what's in the note. Is that right?
I've said it too.
He's opened his mouth, or she's opened her mouth. She's given me a note and said, this is a mortgage note that you'll need to sign to get the loan on your house, for the bank to loan the house. Now, she's opened her mouth, she told me what the document is, and if there's anything in there with which I disagree later, not having read the document, I can shift the responsibility to the loan officer. Is that right?
Well, according to Blonde versus Bank One, a Supreme Court case, and according to Waller versus Marion Protecting Credit, that is correct. When she opened her mouth, that farmer got out of that transaction because she started talking.
Maybe that law
needs... I cited that at page 10 of my brief.
Maybe that law needs to be changed.
Well, no, because what's happening here is this. When the law starts getting out of sync with reality, and the reality is when you talk to me, and you're my trusted advisor, I'm going to believe you. If you're going to protect the person who wants the wrongdoing, and who's going to take advantage of the arbitration? It's going to be the crook and the flimflam man that doesn't want to go to court and wants to make it tough for me to get there.
Counsel, but you know, we live in a democracy where we have elected representatives to help us to make these kinds of laws, and majority rules somehow that legislature has found it appropriate for Ohio to encourage arbitration. Now, that one or some other citizens don't agree with that and think that a trial by jury is more favorable, nevertheless, that is the law that was established by our General Assembly.
And I agree with that, but if you're going to trick someone in what they
tricking
consider...
Tricking is
enough,
another
excuse me,
thing.
If you,
right.
If one of the parties believes they were tricked into arbitration, they're not going to participate in that system.
Should it be
as well as they would?
Counsel, we need the law looks at objectively. So if a person believes they were tricked, is that really the law, or is the law whether or not a reasonable person under the circumstances? Doesn't the law look at things on an objective standard rather than subjective, at least initially, on the principles of law?
In this question, the judge found she was tricked. There was a factual finding she was tricked. Let me give you an example. Uninsured motorist coverage. How many times did this court hear, I didn't know that my policy didn't have it? I didn't know. What did this court do? Your court said, disclose that fact. And what did the insurance companies do? They put a little stick on their things now saying, are you telling me everybody that had uninsured motorist coverage shouldn't have coverage now because they didn't read that contract? You said to the world, disclose it. It's important. It's important to have insurance. Now, isn't that important to give up your jury trial? Is it this much of a burden to Mr. Moss to say, by the way, arbitration? Now, let's go to the final facts of this. Looking factually, if you read that document, it said decline margin account. It says, I'm going to arbitrate that fact. I'm going to say to myself, I didn't decline. I declined the margin account. I have nothing left to arbitrate. You look at where they stuck that clause. Why can't I reasonably believe, if I read it, that I was simply going to say, if I had a margin account, and if I dispute about margin and calling the margin, I'd arbitrate it. They didn't say I was going to arbitrate you being a road broker and selling my account with my permission.
If this is fraud and the inducement is so clear, what's your fear to go to an arbitrator? Because that's all that Judge Gwynn was in effect saying in his dissent, that we're not really stopping her from having her day in court.
Every plaintiff's lawyer goes forum shopping. Give me the jury over the three lawyers in Columbus. Thank you, Judge. I'm a forum shopper. I'll pick that forum of the jury every day. If the jury isn't that good, let's not shore it up. But I think the cornerstone of justice is I'll take my jury of peers, which are my farmers in Fairfield County, hearing my case versus three business suits sitting in the top of the Columbus courthouse. I think I had a better day in the court and justice, and I will be more ready to accept that decision. And I'm not going to give that up that easily. That's why I'm here today. You're taking away my right to a jury trial by one sentence and a declination account that he said that's all it's going to do. And I gave up an entire claim against a rogue broker that sold my accounts without my permission, and I should get all I want out of him with the jury. Now, that is the issue in this case. If you took this case with all due respect, as an issue of the gatekeeper of how we get into ADR, this is bad facts to make good law. That's the way I say this case it is, because we've got fiduciary problems in this case, and if you use this case to say you're stuck with it, then you're saying the duty of fiduciary has been reduced in the state of Ohio. He doesn't have to be as diligent as he was. He doesn't have to disclose as much as he did.
Well, you might as well. You've raised it. Why don't we talk a little bit about your first, your proposition of law that a stockbroker is a fiduciary. Is that presently the law of the state of Ohio?
I believe it is.
In what, I didn't see a case that you cited that said that, counsel.
Well, I found, when I say that, I have to say that I found a federal case that interprets Ohio law, which in the basics it says it's Ohio law. And I did cite in my brief to Throp, which is the Sixth Circuit case, on page 7 of my brief. Under Ohio law, a stockbroker is an agent or bailee. Throp versus Bakke Hasley, 650 Fed Second, Sixth Circuit.
An agent or bailee, is that the same as a fiduciary, isn't it? We have fiduciaries, a high standard.
Both parties here have agreed that Bakke was a fiduciary concerning matters in the scope of his agency.
Pardon me? Which was
it
what?
Says, the court said both parties have agreed that Bakke was a fiduciary.
So the court didn't make that. You're telling us that the parties agreed there that
well,
he was a fiduciary.
They apparently didn't back down on that was a give me.
Yeah.
They didn't have to argue because they were going to lose it. Mm-hmm. So the court and parties agreed to it. I don't see anybody can say. And then we have Doyle versus Ohio Company, unreported out of Clark County, says the fiduciary relationship between a stockbroker and a client doesn't exist. And I give you this other, Cuyahoga, so you have two unreported decisions to say stockbrokers are, and certainly, the stockbroker, I'm giving him all of my investments, all of my confidential information.
Well, not
he
anymore,
makes all my decisions. If he's not fiduciary, nobody is.
Counsel,
a guardian isn't.
Pardon me. The practicalities of today, and we're arguing practicalities here, we have, I guess we... There might be the scenarios where we find a stockbroker as a fiduciary and you give them all your stuff, you've worked with them for years, but today don't we have, you know, we can do it by internet, we can buy stock and trade, we can talk to somebody on a phone call one time and sell, you know, a few shares of this and that. Does that fit? Stockbroker is a fiduciary, is the proposition of law that you've offered. Do you think that?
Well,
is that going to work for us all around the state?
On the internet, I don't have a stockbroker. I buy it directly, and it comes to me. I just exchange it. I don't have a broker. It's, in fact, more protection to me. Let's put this case in the internet, because that'll be the next century on here. Mm-hmm. You're going to tell me that the guy says, internet, check here if you want to decline declination account. I check here on my little mouse, and all of them say, well, by the way, you have to arbitrate that rogue broker now because you clicked the mouse that said you want to decline an account. Who's going to be reading that stuff on a television screen?
It's
going to become
lawyers.
Even more ludicrous when we get on the internet and we have to read documents because you can't scroll that documents that fast on the internet. So when we start making new law for the future, let's protect the consumer because he's the one that's hurt. Remember, Mrs. Woods lost $15,000 because the man sold without. The advantage of these broker houses is I don't want publicity. I don't want that case before a jury in Fairfield County. I want the secrecy of the 10th floor of the Franklin County Courthouse, the three lawyers here in this case. Not good. Not good for business, not good for consumers, not good for the law. My position seems to be better for everyone, except the rogue broker. We ask that you accept it. Any other questions of the justices? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kingsley. Mr. Galliano. Take 30, save 5 seconds, but take 30 if you like.
I'm sorry, sir?
You take 30 seconds if you
30
like.
30 seconds. First of all, Renner v. Becker Paribus, Inc., SD, New York, 1985, 620 F sub 442, Justice Cook. When a plaintiff complains that arbitration provision is invalid because a plaintiff signed the customer consents without reading or understanding them, that goes not to the specific arbitration clause, to the whole contract. Secondly, there is no evidence in this case, and Mr. Most was in Mrs. Wood's face, that he said this is just the arbitration, just the margin declination agreement. Those are facts created for argument purposes only. I plead with this court
counsel,
to
wouldn't you,
look
wouldn't
at the
you
record.
Agree if your client really wanted to have their customers know that they've signed off all their rights to access to the courthouse, to judges and juries, that a separate document that was headed arbitration agreement would be a better way to go than to hand them this document that says, the bold letters really say declining to take a margin account or agreeing to take a margin account. I mean, if you look at that paper, that's what the heading is. It doesn't...
Certainly is the heading, Your Honor.
It doesn't jump out at you that this is... what you're signing is a document agreeing to have all your transactions and all your dealings with your broker handled by arbitration. That's the last sentence of a fair amount of reading.
Well, Your Honor, I would respond as follows. One, it may be, it's really, I mean, I realize the type isn't that big, but it's the only in set off sentences, A, B, C. They're in bold, they're immediately above the signature. Frankly, they jump out at me more than the part about the margin account. Secondly, Ohio law has said, I mean, this form was created by lawsuits. Lawsuits between people about what's enough notice to them. And this is what the brokerage industry came up with, and this is what your brokerage industry uses every day, and this is what goes to arbitration every day. And I guess my position is, just like this court 80 years ago or so said, and did again 50 years ago, when you have something in front of you, and you
well,
have...
That's not the only form the brokerage firms have used.
Correct. But, Your Honor, in the words
other
itself...
Other firms use forms that are more noticeable.
Your Honor, in this Section C itself, it says, in accordance with the pre-dispute arbitration clause in Section 15 of the brokerage agreement on page 7, she's saying... I'm signing this, I realize there's arbitration, I realize there's another booklet that has this information. One fact that's not in the record, but to generally address your question, she was a former client of Mr. Moss's at the Ohio Company, where she signed these exact forms, where she was under arbitration provisions there as well.
She signed them at every firm.
Exactly, and she was not unsophisticated in having brokers and dealers. And all I can say is, I think the law is a good law the way it is. I think it's a law that ought to stand. I think the message to everyone in this courtroom in Ohio is, if someone puts a one-page document in front of you with bold words that tell you you're going to arbitrate, then you're going to arbitrate, and you're responsible for what's signed there. Because if this doesn't go to arbitration, then what would? I thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Galliano. When the case is submitted, you'll be advised of our opinion. We'll take a brief recess.
All rise.